You can be seated. Let's pray together. Father, that song is so fitting as just a prayer for us, that Christ would be the center. So often, it's easy for us to just kind of relegate the things that matter most to the back burner, and we'll get at them at some other point. But may we be reminded today that things that matter most, our relationships with each other, our relationship with you, those sorts of things need to be given priority and giving centrality. And so, Christ, our simple prayer is that as we gather together today, as we worship you, as we open up the scriptures and talk about what it looks like to live more fully and faithfully in this tradition, this Jesus faith, this Jesus way we're a part of, it's just our prayer that you would be the center of all of it, that everything we do and say, every action, every thought, every word, we just come from that place where you are the center and you are the driving force behind all of it. We thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for this church. I thank you for all that you have done here. And God, I anticipate all you want to do. And so as we talk a little bit about our vision, our mission, why we exist, it's just my prayer is that this would be helpful and that this would be challenging, and that you would take it and just do more with it than we could ever ask or imagine. We love you. We thank you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen. Well, good morning. It is great to see you. Welcome to Morgantown Community Church, especially if you happen to be with us for the very first time. We are just thrilled to have you. And we're in, this is the second week of a series on our identity as a church, our mission and vision. It's called Press On While Our Best Days Are Still Ahead. And if you were here last week, I'm just going to try to catch everybody up who maybe weren't here, or maybe we've forgotten. Last week, we began by talking about the idea of journey. Our mission as a church, which is always back there on that wall, I call it the mission wall. It's always back there. But our mission as a church is to empower people to take the next step on their journey with Christ. And so last week we talked about how the idea of journey is central to who we are. That when we enter into this this path of Jesus, like at that moment, when whatever language you want to use for it, when you have like a salvation experience, whatever that moment is, God does not back up a dump truck and just dump it all out on us so that we'll be the person we never have been. We saw in the story of Abraham that faith is that trusting God and is entering to a journey of faith that lasts a lifetime. And so the goal for us as people on a journey is to realize that we are unfinished. That was kind of the word we used, that we are unfinished people, that we aren't who we're going to be, hopefully, and hopefully we're not who we were. We're on this process of changing and becoming new and becoming different. But it is a journey, and we are unfinished. And we need to leave room for that. We need to leave room for the idea that hopefully, in 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, however long it is for us, hopefully we're going to be different people on the other side of this than we are right now. Hopefully we're going to surrender more of ourselves to God than we have yet. And so we talked about this idea of journey. And the goal then, and I don't know what your growing up experience was like, but for me it was like you went to church and they gave you like, you need to do this right now, everything. You need to do all this right now. And so for some people it was they came from a background where they didn't even believe in God, and you had some pastor telling you, you have to believe in God before you leave today. And that was just a big leap for some people. And sometimes it was, you know, maybe the right thing for me to do is to take the next step and entertain that there's a God. Maybe for some of us, the right thing would be not to do the next 10 things on the divine to-do list, but it would be what it would look like to surrender this to God today. What would it look like to surrender this interaction, this relationship, this email, this bitterness, this anger? What would it look like to take the things that I'm holding on to moment by moment by moment and just surrender those to God and entrust? That's how the journey works. It's progressive. You change as God empowers you to change over time. So we started with journey and the idea of being unfinished. But this week I want to talk about this idea of being empowered, because I think this is the part of our mission. Like journey, everybody get. Journey makes sense. We're a journey, you know, life's a journey. But I think the idea of empowered, if we were to sit down and talk about what does it mean to be empowered to take the next step? And I think a lot of times the answer would be, well, you know, it means to be empowered. Right? And we're not really sure. You want to be empowered, but what does that look like? How does that happen? What does that even mean? It sounds awesome, right? Like you want to go to lunch and tell you, what happened at your church today? I was empowered. Watch out for me. I got the power, right? Like you want to say that, but you really have no idea. What am I saying when I say I've been empowered? So let's explore that. If you have a Bible, turn to Ephesians 4. And this is a passage in Ephesians that has become one of those passages I go back to a lot, because sometimes whether you are part of, you're a participant in a church, or whether you're leading a church, or you're part of leadership, whatever that looks like, sometimes I think we lose our way. And sometimes I think that we kind of lose track of what's really important and lose track of what we're here to do, right? We just kind of wander off. And for me, this passage, not only with like what I feel called to do, but I think for the whole church, this passage just kind of rights the ship and reminds us what it really is all about. So Ephesians 4, we're going to begin on the screen in verse 11, but I'm going to begin in verse 7 and just read 7 and then jump to 11. Verse 7, to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. So Jesus, God through Jesus, has given everybody some type of grace, some grace that's going to enable them to do something. Now notice verse 11. So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and teachers. So the writer here begins listing like callings, we would say, vocations, or certain roles in the church. And the writer says things like, well, there are different roles of leadership, different areas of emphasis. And so you have apostles, and people think about people who are sent out, like mission stuff. Then you have like pastors and teachers, evangelists, prophets. The one I'm always leery of when somebody introduces themselves to me as a prophet, that's when I'm like, how do you know you're a prophet? If you print up business cards that say your name and prophet, you probably aren't. But people do this. So there's this, there are all these different roles of leadership in the church. But notice what they're for. Christ gave these to equip the body, to equip his people for works of service, so that the body, the church of Christ, may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Then we will no longer be infants, tossed back and forth by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people and their deceitful schemings. Instead, speaking the truth in love, which, by the way, anytime truth is spoken, you can speak the truth and not speak it in love and be totally out of line. Can we agree on this? Like, it all depends on, is it out of love? Speaking the truth in love, We will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. From him the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. Morning. I'm going to answer one of those at one time. Just like, what are you doing? So right away, we're told that there are certain people in the church who have certain gifts and abilities in the church. And their job, like the pastors, teachers, prophets, evangelists, their job then is to somehow equip, and the word empower can be used interchangeably, to empower people to do works of service. And what I love about this passage is because it's a very hopeful passage. This passage says that as we grow toward maturity, it's actually possible for a church to be a place of unity in Christ. We live in a world that is very divided. Would you agree? We live in a country that is very divided. Would you agree? And what this passage seems to say is that when we get a gathering of people like this together, like we did at 9 o'clock, you get a bunch of people together. I assume that in this room, there are all sorts of people of all different perspectives and backgrounds. I assume we have people of all different political persuasions. I assume that we have people in a non-denominational church who grew up in like more charismatic backgrounds, more liturgical backgrounds, people who grew up in mainline churches like Methodist and Wesleyan, people who grew up in what we would call evangelical churches like Baptist. And I, off the top of my head, can't remember... No, any other evangelicals, so we'll just, Baptists and all 50 varieties of those. And I mean, it's just, I assume we're all over the map. And so we come to the Bible with very different ideas, and we look at the Bible through very different lenses. I mean, depending on how you were raised, you see it, And this passage seems to indicate that it's possible as we grow together for all those things that could divide us to fade away and for us to gather around the one thing that matters most. And that is this Jesus who binds us all together, this Christ who holds, that song we just sang, which is a quote from Colossians, Christ holds everything together, and that includes you and me. That includes this community he's called us to be a part of. It's a very hopeful passage. But this passage, to me, it speaks about what the church is and what the church is supposed to be doing and what the church is supposed to be about. So before I talk about this idea of empowerment, I just want to talk a little bit about what I've come to understand the church to be, specifically what it isn't, and then maybe what it is, and then we'll talk about being empowered. So let's begin with this. The church isn't a building. In one of his books, a guy named Don Everts, a writer, says referring to the church as a building is like referring to people as 2x4s. It makes no sense. And I think we get really attached to bricks and mortar. As people, we get really attached to bricks and mortar. This is why when you've lived in a house for a really long time and you sell it, a lot of times you leave with tears because you've made memories in that place. And I have memories of the last 8 years being in this room with so many of you and just encountering God and worshiping together and being a part of His community. And this place holds special significance to me. But if we can really just be honest, this is just bricks and mortar. All right, this is not what we would call, sometimes people refer to it as God's house. And when I was a kid, I used to have this image of like us putting a cot in the back of the church and God sleeping on it, and we let Him out on Sundays. It's like a zoo for the divine. He like sleeps here, and you know, we show up on Sundays, wake Him up, and He comes and does His thing. That's just not it. God isn't confined to us. This place is no more God's house than my house is, or your house is, because the reality is God is everywhere. And He can't be confined in a divine zoo, no matter if it's a church building or wherever we like to say God. God only speaks in these places and He only does these things. This is a place where we are blessed to come together in comfort and safety and to worship the God who has been with us all along. The God you encounter here is the God you encounter on Monday morning. And I know if you're like me, you would say, what in the world can be good about a Monday morning? But God's present. He's always there. We were in the car the other night driving, and our little boy was talking to us, and he starts talking about God and Jesus, which always is interesting to see what he's coming up with. And he told us the other night that he was like, do you know you can talk to Jesus anytime in your heart? You can just talk to Jesus anytime in your heart. Well, what do you say to Jesus in your heart? You say, thank you. Thank you. I said, where did you learn this? He said, Miss Amanda in my class told me that I could talk to God anywhere. And this is true. Right? I remember as a student growing up, we had kind of outgrown our space at our church. And so we met for Sunday school class at the local fire department. And our pastor's wife was our teacher. And she was very proper and reserved and would never say anything even remotely out of line or anything like that or off color or embarrassing. But this one particular time, we're in this discussion about prayer. And we're just talking about how meaningful prayer can be and all the different places you can pray. And she's listening. You can pray in your car. Don't close your eyes. You can pray anywhere. And she gets really quiet. And she says, you can even pray when you're naked. She didn't add this, but I would just give you a word of caution. Don't do this in front of others. This is a very private time with God when you should not be in public. But the reality is that God, there is no boundary that God has to like. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. He's always speaking. It isn't about a building. Buildings are nice, but buildings cannot hold the divine. The psalmist actually says, God, the entire universe can't hold you. How much anything we create. I think it's a little naive to assume we build a structure and that's where God is. Let's see, he may be here, but he's here because he's everywhere else too. So I would begin with the church isn't a building. And when we refer to the church as a building, we essentially lose kind of the oomph and the chutzpah that the church should have. It's not just a building because buildings are stationary, correct? If the building is moving, get out of it, right? And the reality is that the church is not supposed to be stationary. It's not static. It's dynamic. It's alive. It's moving. It's doing things in the world. So the church isn't a building. Next, the church, I would say, isn't an ambiguous institution. And I realize that's an odd phrase, but here's what I mean. I've met people who've come to our church, and I assume people who've gone from our church to other churches have said similar phrases to the ones I'm about to say. I've heard people say things like, the church hurt me. The church let me down. Church disappointed me. Church dropped the ball. How many of you ever heard these before? I've also heard people say things like, the church really came through for me. Church really blessed me. The church really had my back. The church was really there when I needed them. And we talk about the church like it's just some amorphous blob that is not really well defined. And it's just this institution, this organization that exists. And what when we talk about the church that way, which is true, we can say the church helped us. But what we're really saying is people, because the church is ultimately people. You can have a building. And you can have a 501c3, you know, you can have all the stuff. And if you don't have people, you don't have a church because the church is people. It's just that's what makes up the church. Next slide, please. The church is flesh and blood people. So when you talk about the church, when the church did a really good job or didn't do a really good job, and I think we need to be honest and say the church has been a part of and is still, I would argue, often on the wrong side of things a lot, and we still miss the mark, and we still hurt people sometimes, but the church has also brought a lot of beauty and creativity and life into the world. And it's because of people. It's because of people. The church is people. I have two. I have like a duality. I have like two people inside of me. I have this nice guy who really wants to do the right thing, who loves God, who wants to be generous and compassionate and kind to others, who always wants to make the right decision, who always wants to put others first, who always wants to sacrifice my own good for the good of someone else. That guy rarely wins. I have this other guy inside of me who's a little bit selfish, a little bit cynical, not very hopeful. He really is not very compassionate. He loves to condemn and judge other people. He loves to always be right, even at the expense of relationships. He kind of is a bit greedy sometimes and doesn't really concern about everybody else. How many of you have those same two people living inside of you? The rest of you are liars. So put that on the other column. You have a liar inside of you as well. Good for you. But we're made up of these two different, like, there's a shadow, so we all have a shadow side, the side of us that is like, there's this side of light that's trying and wanting and longing to do the right thing and partner with God to see the world become a better place. And then there's this other part that really just wants our way. And that's why the church is capable of such beauty, because there's a bunch of us getting together with that beautiful side to us that wants to see the world become better. And that's why the church messes up sometimes, is because it's the other side of us. We all get together and want it our way, and we don't care about others. And we want to be right at the expense of being loving. And we want to tell truth at the expense of actually speaking truth in love. And that's why the church is a messy place. Because we're all made up of these two competing sides. The light and the dark. The side that does right and the side that is selfish and vindictive and angry and bitter. And so this is what God has to work with. It's us. And yet Jesus, when he like takes off and leaves, he leaves it in our hands to take it forward. So when we talk about church, the writer of Ephesians gives us some good language. He says that Christ has given specific gifts to specific people, like to teach, to lead, to train, to equip, to empower. And he's done this. Like, the reason pastors and church staff exists is because of this. So that the pastors and church staff and leadership, elders, can equip the people so that people can serve. So that the body, which is the church, can be built up, so that we all reach unity in the faith, and so that we all become mature. Like, the ultimate purpose and goal of the church is to equip people to serve. That's what we're supposed to be. That's what we're all about. We're equipping people, and by people, I'm talking about all of us here, we're equipping ourselves to go out and then serve. The word serve in Greek in the New Testament, it's the word diakonia, and it's where we get our word deacon. The acts of service are, if you grew up in a church that had deacons, that's where we get that term. And deacons originally in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, when they first create that kind of position in the church, or whatever you call it, that role, deacons had one job, and that was to wait on tables for widows. And so you get kind of the idea behind this. It's an idea of service. It's an idea not of being a power broker, but being in the role of a servant. And we have been called to be equipped to serve. Church is not, first and foremost, a spectator sport. I think sometimes that's what we turn it into. We watch people sing, we listen to somebody talk, and then we leave. And we turn church into just, we're really good at spectating in our society. We watch all sorts of things. And there are some things you just have to get in on the action to really enjoy it, to really get it, to really become part of it. And church is one of those things. You cannot sit on the sidelines. You have to jump in and be a part of the game. Marcus Barth, who was the son of Karl Barth, great 20th century theologian, he said this about this passage: "The spirit of ministering and the commission to minister is given to all the saints and to each saint, not to a select clergy only." By the way, when he says saints here, who's he talking about? Football team, New Orleans. They're great. No, he's talking about who? You. He's talking about us. When the writers like Paul, when he would write a letter, he would begin like 1 Corinthians begins like this: "To the saints in Corinth." Have you ever read 1 Corinthians? They had it was like a Jerry Springer marathon in Corinth. It's all it was. It was terrible. These people were making terrible decisions. And Paul writes, before he fleeces them for all the ways they're giving Jesus a bad name, he reminds them of who they really are. You are saints. It means holy one, set apart one. Saints. You're a saint. I'm a saint. Right? That's who we are. To all the saints. And not to select clergy only. This means that no member of the church is chosen or condemned to be either only an observer or only at the receiving end of evangelism. I love that. Nobody in the church is relegated to the spectators. Nobody's relegated to the stands. In the church, everybody is given a gift, everybody's given an ability, everybody's given a role to play, and they're put in the game. Isn't that beautiful? When I first, I didn't start playing basketball until about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, seven times getting away, but it's been, not even a decade yet since I started playing basketball. And I remember when I first started playing, people would pick me early because I'm tall. And then they saw me play. And the next week, they did not pick me so early. So I'd have to go somewhere where people didn't know me, so I'd get picked early for my ego. And then the next week, they wouldn't pick me. So we kind of live in this culture, like we pick the people who we think are the best. And that's not how the church works. The church is open for everybody. There's no favoritism in the church. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your family name is. It doesn't matter how much money you have. In the church, everybody's on level ground. Everybody matters, and everybody has a role to play. Isn't that beautiful? In a world that tries to just completely divide us, the church is a place where everybody is important and everybody matters and everybody belongs and everybody gets in on the action. Nobody has to sit on the bench and think, man, I would love to get to be a part of that. Everybody gets to get in the game. It's beautiful. So Christ has given some people these specific gifts of teaching, of training, of leading, equipping, so that the people can serve, so they can be equipped to serve, so that the body can be built up, so that we can reach unity in the faith, so that we can all become mature. Now, to make this happen, because maturity is the goal. That's the ultimate goal. If you read this and take it seriously, like the ultimate goal is that we would all become mature. We were out with our family yesterday, and we were talking about somebody who recently turned 40. And when I heard they just turned 40, I thought, wow, I can't believe they're that old. And then I started thinking. And I thought, I'll be 40 in 8 years. I remember when that was 18 years. And people who were 40 really felt old. And then I started realizing, I'm getting older. And then I had this other thought. I really don't feel like I'm that old. I don't feel like I'm in my 30s. I don't feel like I should be old enough to, like, be, you know, does anybody else feel this way? Like, here's the question I always have for people who are in the more prime of life. When did you feel like an adult? Like, or is anybody else like me? You just don't feel like an adult most of the time. Most of the time when you're doing adult things, you're going, why are they letting me do this? This is crazy. Adults need to do this. And I am not, clearly not an adult. I don't know when you feel, I don't know when you walk in, like you feel like, now I'm an adult. We were at dinner the other night. My wife Carla and I had a date night, and we were at dinner, and we were in a kind of a nice restaurant, and there was this couple behind us on their first date. So we just listened and made fun of them the entire time. That was our entertainment for the evening. And they're on their first date, and the guy, you can tell, I mean, they're probably in their 20s, and you know, first date, I think this may have been the first date this guy had ever been on in his life. I wanted to offer some tips at the end. So this guy, he's talking very loudly about himself and his occupation and all the things. Great. He told her his favorite movie was American Psycho, which I think if you're a girl and you hear that, run, because this dude is nuts. And so, you know, he's going through all this stuff, and right, kind of they're ordering drinks. He orders not just a glass of wine. Dude ponies up for a bottle of wine. He is out to impress. The waitress brings it over. She uncorks it at the table. And, you know, she pours just a little bit in the glass. He picks it up, does this. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. That's nice. Can I be honest? Like, half the time I'm trying to pretend like to be an adult, that's what I'm doing. Oh, this is nice. Yes, I'm an adult. And I don't know when you actually feel, I don't know when you feel that. You know, I remember when my great-grandmother, she was dying of cancer. And one of the last things she said to my mom was, I feel like I feel like I'm still just a girl. And she's like, she's pushing 80. And I think, I don't know, how, you know, but hopefully, here's what I hope. Even though we don't all feel like adults, I hope that I'm much more mature now than I was in my late teens and 20s. And I hope, because when I was in my late teens and 20s, I was in college. And some of the stuff I did in college, I pray that if given the opportunity to do it over again at 30-something, I would not make the same decisions. There was this one time when I lived near a pet store called the Animal House. And we had a friend who was really short. And somehow somebody gave us an alligator costume. I don't know why. But I remember like one Saturday or Friday night, just for fun, we dressed him up as an alligator and tried to buy mice from the clerk with him with us. Like, we got an alligator. What kind of mice? She said, well, how big's the alligator? Like, brought him in. About 5'3". And now, it's totally stupid. Who does that? Who wastes a good Friday night on carrying your buddy around in an alligator costume? So I hope that I would not do those same things again. I hope that by the time I'm 40, I'm going to be more mature than I am now. You know, I hope that that's the case. And even though we don't feel like adults sometimes, I do hope that maturity is happening in all of us. I hope we're growing. I hope we're becoming more responsible. I hope we're making better decisions. I hope those things are happening in me, and I hope they're happening in you. And I think it does over time, even though you may not realize you're becoming a grown-up. It's when you tell your kid to stop doing the thing that you used to do all the time. That's when you know, like, okay, something has changed in me. It's when you're counseling and you're talking to a student and they're, you know, going through, they just broke up with their boyfriend or girlfriend. You're like, you're in the seventh grade. Relax. But you remember when you would have fall apart too. So we grow and we change over time. And maturity is the goal. When somebody acts like they're 18, when they're 40, they have problems, right? And we look at people and we say, that's not right. And see, the problem is we recognize that in life, as we grow in age, that we're supposed to mature and those sorts of things. I think what happens spiritually, though, I think we're completely satisfied with being stunted in our maturity, spiritually speaking. I think that we don't really think about it very much. That, you know, we don't think about, am I becoming a deeper person? Am I becoming more trusting of God? Can I hear God's voice maybe over time a little clearer than I did when I first started? You know, are there changes happening in me that I know I haven't arrived yet and I've got to press on? There's a lot more ahead of me and I'm not there. But am I farther along than when I began the journey? That's the question. And I think so often, this is the area of our life that I would argue is most important. And what we do is we take it and we just kind of put it on the back burner and we go out and we work hard and we do everything we have to do. And if there's time left, we'll go fetch this part of our life and we'll give it some attention. And the reality is, if spiritual maturity is the ultimate goal for you and me, then we need a lot more attention to this area than we give it. Bill Hybels wrote a book, and I heard him coin this term once in a talk I heard him give. He talked about developing a holy discontent, which means that you are completely, in some ways, grateful and satisfied with what God is doing in your life right now. But you're also, you don't want to become complacent. You want to be discontent enough to say, God, I want more of you tomorrow than I had today. I want to know you in a deeper way. I want to trust you in a deeper way tomorrow than I have today. And so there's this sense like we need to keep pushing forward. And I believe in order to become mature, there are certain things we need. And I'll be honest with you, I think one of the things we need to become spiritually mature is we need the church. To become the people that God is calling us to be, we need the church. And I know sometimes I'm so embarrassed when Christians say and do really dumb things. I am so embarrassed to identify myself with them. I want to say, I'm not a Christian, I'm a Jesus follower. It's the same thing. Right, it's potato, patata. The reality is, though, the church has done some bad things. We've done some bad things in history with the Crusades. We do some bad things now. But the church also does some beautiful things. And the church has also been the center of life and creativity. It's been the center of acceptance and love. It's been the center of movements that have changed history. The church is also a beautiful place. We need the church. Because we need community. When God, in Genesis, one of the creation accounts in Genesis, God creates the first man and he's alone. And God looks at the man and says, it's not good that he's alone. He needs others. We were created to be in community with other people, not to kind of be floating out on our own islands. A friend of mine, about a year ago, I don't remember who the friend was either because I'd love to thank them. They sent me a link to a YouTube video. And the video was of a guy who had decided, he used the word apostate. All churches in America, in the world, are apostate churches, which means they've left the true faith. And the only person behind who's clinging to the true faith was this dude on YouTube. And so he was starting a YouTube church, like you do. And so he was going to post weekly videos, and because he believed there was a faithful remnant who would join him and be the true church on YouTube. And so he creates this video of himself for his new converts, and it's how to baptize yourself at home. And guy fills up, he's got like a camera in his bathroom. He fills up his bathtub and he's just sitting there and he's talking about why all churches are bad. Then he says, all right, if you want to become part of this church, which is the true church, you just have to bat. And dude grabs his nose and is like, and I'm watching it. And there's part of me that's going, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I've got to show this to everybody. And did. There's the other part of me. It says, how sad and how off the mark that we could be so arrogant to believe that we really don't need other people. We just need our own internal relationship with God, and that's all that really matters. We need each other. I need you. I have learned more from being with you and interacting with you and talking to you and being in groups with you. I've learned more from you guys than I ever had up to this point in my life. I need you. I need you to continue to be a part of my spiritual journey. I need you to be a part of me taking the next step. And I hope that I can be that for you. And I hope that you feel about others in here. We need each other so that we can continue just to take the next step. We need one another for that. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. I think that church should be a place where no matter how young you are, you have a role in helping people take the next step. Can I tell you how often that my kid or one of your kids says something that's so simple and yet so profound and so true? God can talk to us anywhere. We can talk to Jesus in our heart. Can I just tell you, we grow up and we read lots of big things, but that's simple and true, and we need that. And I believe no matter how old you are, I think sometimes what happens is we get in the prime of life and we decide to retire from everything. And we retire from being influential and sharing our wisdom in the church. And if you're kind of in that season of your life, we need you not to fade out. We need you to come on stronger than you ever have. Because we need your wisdom. We need your guidance. We need what only you can offer. I believe everybody has a role, and we need the church to become who we've been called to be, because Christ has given some of us this calling and this vocation to empower others so that the people can serve, so that the body can be built up, so that we all reach unity in the faith, and so that we all become mature. And I've come to find maturity hinges on two things. There are two things that will depend on whether or not you and I ever become spiritually mature. One is you have to have somebody to equip you. You need some people in your life who are a little farther along in the journey who can teach you what you don't know, and who can help you figure out the difficulties and can help you navigate the uncertainties and those sorts of things. You need those people who are equipping you, a pastor, a small group leader, a wise mentor. You need those people in your life. And then, in order to be mature, you have to be willing to be equipped. You have to be willing to be equipped. Dallas Willard, one of my favorite, he's a philosopher, teaches philosophy at USC, but he's also, I think, one of the most brilliant minds when it comes to what it means to follow Jesus. And he says that spiritual transformation, which is what maturity is, it requires three things, a commitment to three things. You have to have a vision for who you want to be, a vision for who you'll become at the end of this thing. If I surrender my life to Christ, what would my life look like? What is that vision? When I first read that, I thought, you know, I don't even know what the next 5 years look like for me as just an individual in the world. How in the world do we know what it looks? But you have to have, what is that vision? Who do you want to become? When you think about the things you say all the time, man, I wish I had more patience. Does anybody else say that all the time? All the time. I wish I had more patience. I wish I was more compassionate. I wish I was more generous. I wish I wasn't so judgmental. You have to have that vision for who do you want to be? Who do you feel God calling you to be? You have to have that vision. And then he said you need intention. You need to decide to become that person. And then you need the means to do that. So about vision, here's what he says. The vision that underlies spiritual transformation into Christ-likeness is the vision of life now and forever in the range of God's effective will. That's his way of talking about God's kingdom. So here's what this vision asks. Who would I be if I surrendered to Christ? Like, who's God created me to be? That's the question. Who has God created me to be? The core of my being, what do I believe God is calling me to? What is the path he has me on? That's the vision. It's not just our vision. It's if I were, you know, to really listen to the Spirit of God, who would God teach me and lead me to become? And then you have to have the intention. And intentions kind of get a bad rap because, you know, we say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? Most of them are probably mine. I've laid more asphalt on that road than anybody I know. How many of you have done this? You decide in late December every year you're going to exercise and get in shape. Anybody do this besides me? More lies. And here's exactly what happens to me every year. I really have good intentions. January 1 gets here, and I'll watch what I eat a little bit. I might actually get up to go turn the TV on and off instead of using the remote. You know, you're trying to do well. Do better. And then you get in mid-January and you realize, I have totally blown this already. So I'm going to start setting a goal for 2014. In 2014, I'm going to run a marathon. Right? But what's going to happen in January of 2014? But those donuts look great. Right? We have intentions and they kind of fall by the wayside. So here's what he says about intention. An intention is brought to completion only by a decision to carry through with the intention. That's when it's real. Otherwise, it's just a daydream. An intention is, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be this person, and I'm going to actually get up off the couch and become that person with God's help. And then means. Means are how. If I intend to obey Jesus Christ, I must decide to be the kind of person who will obey. That is, I must find the means of changing my inner being until it is substantially like his, pervasively characterized by his thoughts, feelings, habits, and relationship with the Father. If I want to become this person who I envision God seeing me as, this is what's possible in the future if I just surrender. I develop the intention, And then I seek to be empowered to do that. And I think where we go off track is we've got the vision and we really, really, really want to become better people. We want to become who God made us to be. And we end up falling off track with actually following through and having the means. Because in order to be empowered, it takes somebody to do the empowering and somebody who's willing to put in the hard work to be empowered. Several years ago, a bunch of guys in our church decided that we wanted to start into a softball team in a church softball league in Warren County. And I'll never forget the first game we had. We drove down there with some friends, and I realized when we got to the game that I'd forgotten my glove at home, which is pretty essential when playing a sporting event. You have to have the equipment. So I borrowed a glove, and I started in center field. And I had in my head that I was going to be as good at this as I was in high school. You know, I'm going to be really, really good at this. And when the game started, well, just to give you a spoiler alert, we lost 30-0 in two innings. I'll never forget, the first ball came to me, and I saw it. It was clear. I was going to catch it. And I turned my glove like this. I was going to catch it really cool and nonchalant-like. I felt it hit my glove. I started trotting ahead to throw the ball in. I reached in my glove, and there is no ball in that glove. And I turned, it's rolled to the fence. That was the whole two innings. The whole 15 minutes we played. I didn't even sweat. It was that. It was just boom, boom. It felt like mortar fire. These guys were big and strong, and they'd practiced. And one of my buddies said it perfectly. You know what we did? We just got up off the couch and came and played softball. These guys practiced. Right? That's the difference. They practiced all the time. And when they came up to the plate to hit, I was physically frightened. Like, I could feel myself shaking. Because I don't want to get hit by that ball. It was really hard. And there's this like, oh, we just decided, oh, let's give it a go and see what happens. And these other guys, they took this very, very seriously. They trained for this. They showed up with actual equipment that they remembered to bring with them. They had done this before. And we were all in our late 20s, 30s, early 40s, and we showed up to just, yeah, we'll just play a little softball. It's slow pitch. Can't be that difficult. That's what happens so often. I'm going to make a spiritual connection, I promise. That's what happens for us spiritually, I think. We just like, well, I'll just hop off the couch and become the person God wants me to be. That's all I'm going to. I'll just be lazy. If it really requires effort, I don't want to do it. I just want to go have a good time. And if I can grow a little spiritually, that's beautiful. And the reality is, spiritual growth, just like any other kind of growth, takes effort. It takes intention. It takes great determination. It's going to cause you to sweat a little bit. There is no quick fix or quick path to spiritual growth and becoming the kind of person that God has intended you to be. When I was young, really young in pastoring, one of the first churches I was a part of as a pastor, I was having a really hard time because I just wanted to walk into the situation and everything to be perfect. I wanted everybody to like me. I wanted no effort and everything to be perfect and everybody to like me. And I wanted people just to come to our church without any, you know, just wanted it to like kind of be like bippity boppity boo. You know what I mean? Just like immediately. And so I called my pastor that I had grown up with one day, and I'm just complaining and blaming everybody else for my problems. And he said that to me. He said, Josh, there is no shortcut to becoming the kind of pastor God has called you to be. There isn't. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take determination. You're going to have to grow, and it's going to hurt. And that has been true in my journey. I think it will be true in all of our journeys. When we set ourselves to grow, to become mature, to pursue this goal that God has for us, it cannot be easy. There are people who need to be forgiven that we don't want to forgive. There are enemies to be prayed for that we do not currently in this moment have the prayers to pray. There are people we want to condemn and write off that if we really take this path seriously, we can't condemn them and write them off. It's not easy. What I'm learning is that when you take this seriously, a lot of the black and white, I'm wrong, you're right, all that stuff really starts to bleed together, and there's more gray hues and tones than we imagined. It's hard. It's difficult. It's brutal. But it leads to life. It leads to less regret. It leads toward being a more whole person. It leads to being the person you were made and intended to be. And I want that for me. I want that for you. The reality is there's no shortcuts. And I really think our best days are ahead because I think as we allow ourselves to be empowered, the sky's the limit for us. Our journeys have not even begun. We're still at the starting line. Who knows? Who knows who we could become if we moment by moment, step by step, chose to be empowered to become people who in our own ability we can never, ever, ever become. And so I just want, we're going to worship some more, we're going to sing, and I just wanted to leave you with this question to think about as we're singing and throughout the day. Am I living or ordering my life in such a way that I'm being empowered to take the next step on the journey? Because this doesn't happen accidentally. You don't stumble into running a marathon. You don't stumble into being a championship softball team. It takes hard work. It takes effort. It takes intention. It takes blood and sweat and tears. And right now, if you look at your life and your priorities and where you're spending all your energy and effort, are you going to, at the end of this journey, be who you really feel like you're called to be if nothing changes? Or is it possible that maybe you're being invited to begin a process of really rethinking what matters most and really making some hard decisions and really spending some time and energy to become who God's called you and created you to be? We're starting small group signups today, and I firmly believe that small groups are the place where this journey in this empowerment really takes place. What we do here is beautiful, but we can't do in this setting on a Sunday morning everything we need. So small groups is the place where you really get to know people and really get to be challenged to grow with them as a community. And we're offering, I think, 6 small groups, which is nowhere near as many as we need because we have people who aren't leading who need to lead. But I want to challenge you. If we have to have 50 people per small group, whatever that looks like, I want to challenge you. If you're not in a group, find a group. We're offering groups on Sunday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. So there are plenty of opportunities. We're offering one on Sunday morning. There are plenty of opportunities for you to plug in and find a place where you can be challenged and you can be in interaction and you can be growing with other people. But it may require some thoughts about priorities. It may require some thoughts about schedule. So that's the question we need to end with. Are we ordering our lives in such a way that this is actually possible? Are we willing to make the hard decisions and do the hard things to become the people that we really deep down long to be and really deep down know this is who Christ has called me. This is who God has made me to be. More like Christ in my thinking, feeling, and acting. More like Him in the way I treat others. More like Him in every single aspect of who I am. Let's pray. God, we are just grateful that you have chosen to partner with us. That when you launch an initiative to rescue, redeem, and restore all creation, when you want to set the cosmos right, you begin with a guy named Abraham. You invite him to a journey, and through Abraham, you've invited us. Flawed, broken, beautiful, hurt, and healing, you've invited us to this journey. God, so many of us need to be, in many ways, have parts of us recreated, remade, remolded. And because we've been hurt and we've been broken. We've developed attitudes and some actions that maybe aren't helpful or not healing. For many of us, our pride has controlled our life and it's been unchecked and it's all about us and what we want. And what we long to be are people who are like Jesus, and people like Jesus focus on others. They put others first. They surrender and sacrifice and give for others. God, so we bring to you the parts of us that are broken and in need of healing, in need of remaking, and in need of rescue. We realize this is a journey, not a dump truck experience. And so we just ask you today to make clear the next step and show us the means, show us how to be empowered to take that step. Help us to do the hard things. Help us to sacrifice. Help us to reprioritize. Help us to order our lives in such a way that spiritual transformation, that the spiritual maturity actually becomes possible as you work through us. It's in the name of this Christ who holds all things together, we pray. And everybody said, let's stand and sing.